There you go, Bob.
Okay, 6 o'clock, we're gonna call our work session to order. All right, let me see, I gotta get my, where is it here? Okay, the local law, volunteer firefighters and ambulance workers exemption.
Hi, good evening, I put a packet of information in all of your boxes today, so I don't have to run around and not social distance to give them to you. Back, I believe, in February, I got a call from the village clerk, and she had a question about this exemption. And she had noticed that one property in the village had gotten the exemption flag for this exemption on the assessment roll, and she didn't remember that they'd ever passed it. So during the research for her to figure out, you know, what was going on with this one exemption, I discovered that back in 2005, when this exemption first came out, and it was a small benefit for volunteer firemen who serve and ambulance workers to help with recruitment. And for some reason, I don't know why, but the town of Lysander never addressed it. They never, to my knowledge, they never discussed it, and nothing ever happened. I'm gonna send the same information to the village, and then they will have the discussion. The town of Van Buren passed this back in 2005 when it first came out. So we bring everybody up to speed. I informed Bob, Mr. Wicks, the supervisor, about this, and I said when we get through grievance day and things are a little calmer in the assessor's office, I would come in and talk about this exemption so that you can address it and decide whether or not you want to allow it. So in your information, we currently have 7 volunteer firemen exemptions that apply only to county because the town has not passed it inside the village, and we have 25 in the town outside. The exemption amount is a flat fee of $3,000 of assessed value, so it's a very small exemption. You can see that there's 21,000 exempted for inside the village and $75,000 in assessed value exempted for the town. At $3,000 per exemption. You have a listing of those exemptions. You also have real property tax law, which allows this to happen, attached to your packet. And you have the actual application that's applicable for Onondaga County. And a copy of the last page is a copy of the law that was adopted in the town of Van Buren as a sample. And I will entertain any questions that you have.
So I'm remembering we did something which must have been military then?
It was the Cold War veterans exemption. Okay. Yes.
All right. And so if your house is assessed at $250,000 with this, it would be $247,000?
Yes, that's correct. And it would apply only to, right now it applies in the town of Lysander, only to county. If you adopt it, it would apply to county and town, and if the village adopts it, the properties in the village would get that savings on their village bill. So this is basically housekeeping. So that we have on record whether or not we approve it or whether we don't, and the village the same way.
And I'm just curious about the technical aspect, you know, part of when you reassess someone's property. So let's say you've got one of these.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say I have one of these and my house is assessed at $200,000. I have it at $197,000, and then you increase my assessment by $5,000 next year. Mm-hmm. How does this?
Doesn't change. The exemption doesn't change.
$5,000 gets added to the $197,000 or the?
The $5,000 gets added to the total assessment.
Okay.
So it'll be $205,000, and then you get the $3,000 would come
off.
Okay,
that's how it works. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Oh, I think it's a good idea. I mean, it's and everybody, our fellow town and village are doing this, so it seems like it's the right thing to do. I mean, a volunteer fireman, I don't know what's going on, but I can't imagine. I think we're just holding on by the skin of our teeth in terms of how many there aren't. And we depend upon them.
I agree. And if it helps with recruitment, that's great.
Okay, we'll put it on.
Yeah, so you would have to do a public hearing, obviously.
We'll get all the everything we need to for the next meeting, and then we'll start the ball rolling. So we'll have to do a public hearing.
Yeah, and nothing.
Set the public hearing.
Yeah.
Right.
Nothing will apply. You got lots of time. Nothing will apply
we
until
got time.
Next year's assessment.
Yeah, so we got plenty of time to do it. But anybody have a problem with moving forward on that?
Not at all.
Okay, so we'll put that together, and then we'll get that going. We have to have a public hearing on a couple of other things, so we could probably do that all at once. All right? Yeah, we'll put a number of things on so people don't have to come every meeting for one public hearing. We got a couple of issues with stop signs, and we can put that on there so anybody that wants to come, they can address all three issues at one meeting.
Will we be able to fit people in here?
What's that?
Will we be able to have enough seating?
Hopefully by the time we do it, you know. Okay. I mean, if not, we're going to have to come up with a plan for, you know, if more people want to speak, then we have room for chairs. Then what we can do is have people come in, they can speak, then...
On behalf of one public...
We can move them out, then the next, you know, they can wait in their car and we'll come out and just... I think Sergeant Fisher could help us with that if we had to roll them in and out, so... local law for Giddings Crest stop signs. I had a gentleman that lives in Giddings Crest, Mr. Tom Lilienthal, called me up and asked me about a four-way stop sign at the corner of, Coachman's Whip and Hourglass. So I went out there, took a look at it, and you know, it's right in the middle of halfway in between the Route 48 and the back of the development. Ordinarily that, when Mr. Yeager and I were talking, ordinarily that wouldn't be a spot that you would put one, because it's not for speed, to reduce speed and things in the traffic, but that particular area happens to be a four-way stop, and it's right in the middle, so, and there, Mr. Lilienthal said that that's a stop for the buses, for people to pick kids, or for the school to pick kids up. And I checked with Mr. Rodhams from school district, and he in fact confirmed that. So taking that into account, it just looks like an appropriate location to put a four-way stop, because kids get on and off, and it is in the middle where you could pick up a little bit of speed. So it looks like a good spot to do that. You could take a look at it if you want, you know, if you want to drive by, but I already did. I drove the neighborhood, and once he told me it was a stop for the school buses, I thought that it would be appropriate for that.
I went down there one time. If it's the same place, I'm thinking there's a slight turn in the road. Is there a big spruce or something right there too?
Yeah, okay. Right on the corner.
I've looked at it already.
Yeah, So we have to have a public hearing for that, and then we also have a public hearing for, what was the other one?
When Whispering, we take dedication of Whispering Homes 4, there'll be a stop sign required where Harpkin Lane intersects with Rubicon. So we can do one public hearing to get all three stop sign locations into the B&T law.
Yeah, so we can get the stop signs in, we can do the other hearing for the volunteer firemen, so we could get them all done in one night. You know, that way people are busy. If they're interested in all three of those issues, they could make one meeting. Okay, so if we're good with that, we'll move forward with that. Anybody have a problem with that? That before we stop? Roman?
No, I think
good.
Great.
Oh, okay. Elizabeth Street, Highway Garage. With the fire department building that new fire station on Smoky Hollow Road, they're probably going to vacate Elizabeth Street, I would imagine. I haven't had conversations with them. Next week, I will. But if they do, the village of Baldwinsville is interested in that. So as long as that's okay with everybody, I'll get together with Mr. D'Arcangelo and the mayor, and we can start talking about that. But I would imagine we'd want to rent that out, right? Or
that's what I was curious. Yeah, I so when you say they're interested in it, do they want to purchase the property, or do
I think they will do either.
Okay.
So that's something. When we, I think if they're going to purchase it, we'd have to get an appraisal on it first to see what the property is worth, and then go from there. But they expressed interest in doing something, whether it was to purchase it or to rent it out.
And just clarification, because I'm confused about this one. We use it. The highway department uses a part of this.
Yes, that's the thing. That's why I think we're going to have some discussions with the highway superintendent. If we were to sell it, well, you know, what is he going to do with his the equipment that's in there now? I had a conversation today with Minority Leader Barkley. He came in and dropped off some hand sanitizer to us, about 8 gallons of it, which was nice of him. And we had a little conversation about some of the funding that's out there. And you know, he said that in the state they're scrambling for money. They're looking for money everywhere. So we were talking about CHIPS. We were CHIPS funding. We were talking about different grants that we got. And there's a $50,000 grant with the parks that I spoke to him about. And you know, he's good. That one's his. So he's good with that one. But he's going to let me know if we can, in fact, when we would get it, and if it's going to be a while, you know, how long is it going to be? Maybe we can move forward on some of the things in the park that we were looking to do, because money, if we got a band now, money's cheap. Money's cheap to borrow, so it might benefit us to do something now, knowing that that's coming in. I also asked him about the money on Willow Parkway, that $440,000. He's going to check into that. And he's going to check into the cold storage $100,000 grant. He's going to check into both of those. Those weren't his, so he said, you know, the one was from Senator DeFrancisco. So he said the way Senator DeFrancisco isn't there anymore, so.
Yeah, we do have a project number for that.
Yeah.
If he needs it, let me know, and I'll forward it to him so that he can.
Yeah, I'll get in touch with him next. You and I will sit down. We'll call him on all three and get him whatever information we have. We'll send it out. And they're going to get back to us on, you know, where it is, where it stands, when we could.
Last I heard, it was still stalled in fire seeker environmental review for the cold storage one. I don't know why it's stalled, honestly.
Yeah, that one on Willow Parkway, that was a state grant, wasn't it?
That's
okay,
right.
That's what I told him. That's he said if it's a state grant, the money could very well still be there.
Yep.
So
that's what the DOT is indicating.
Yeah. So he's going to check on that, and if it's there, it might be beneficial for us, seeing that if we know we're going to get that money, and he tells us that, and he's going to give us some assurance. Maybe we might want to think about borrowing that money too, because he said even with any of those grants, you have to wait a year. But money's pretty cheap now, and costs are only going to go up. So the cost of labor and material cost might outweigh the cost that we would pay in the interest. And the thing I was asking was, okay, if we do band for that money, and we come in under budget, will the additional money be able to be used towards the interest on the grant? And he believed that it could, but he's going to get a definitive answer on that. So. And when Mr. Yeager and I were talking, we should be good on that one, as far as material costs and stuff. So,
just as a point of information, a municipal bond closed last week, $2.5 million at 0.9% interest, less than 1%.
Yeah, so that's good.
Money's cheap.
Yeah, so we might
refinance anything we got out there right now.
that, and like I said, with that project, if they can assure us that we're going to get that money, even if we had to wait a couple of years, it might be worth us doing now, because the material cost, yeah, the interest is nothing, and the material cost will outweigh what, you know, the increase in that would outweigh what we're paying in interest. So, you know, that might be something we could move on fairly quickly. And you were going to throw that out for, we were looking at throwing that out to bid anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just waiting for the green light from board the DOT, and I'll
yeah. Put that out to bid.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. Mrs. Solomon, she's our renter in the other part of the building, and she, I had a meeting with her the other day, and her company is going to, the home company, is going to a different style of servicing their clients, where they're doing it all online now. So everything's going to be online, their training's going to be online, where she used to do training in the office. They're not even going to allow her to do that. Everything's going to be paperless. So she asked me if we would consider allowing her to sublease that area. And I asked her, okay, who's going to go out and find the renters? And she said she would do that. So I don't see any disadvantage for us allowing her to do that. What I would tell her is that obviously the person would have to, you know, meet our criteria. We just can't have anybody. But as long as they met our criteria, I didn't, and it was helping her out, and she was willing to do all the work, I don't see where it, you know, why we can't help her out, as long as we're not losing any money. That's just my perspective.
We already gave her some kind of break, did we not?
Well, we just postponed her payments by 3 months, I think.
Well, it was for 2 months, and she only took 1 month.
Okay.
And she would make up that that difference before she vacated the property. Yeah. All we did was, she just has to make up the additional rent amount before her lease ends up.
What right now, it's just 1 month.
1 month, right. Yep.
And so if she finds, let's say she finds a suitable subletter,
mm-hmm.
then how do we interface with that? How do we make sure that they meet our criteria, for instance?
Well, that's what we would have to, come up with.
The tenant is
just like any other
rent. Approval.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no issue with that, right?
No, as long as
there's a process.
We could even, whatever the amount of time is left on our lease, we could even draw up a new lease for the new tenant, and then she wouldn't have to sublease it. We would be the renters. That'd be a cleaner way to do it, wouldn't it?
Either way, yeah.
Yeah. I think that would be the cleanest way to do that. So should I tell her that we can move forward with that?
I'm good with it.
Well, why not? But I guess on the other hand, if she can sublease it and she's going to earn some profit on that, right? Why wouldn't we just change the terms of the lease we have with her and say, all right, you don't need all your space, we're going to take back, and then we would lease it? Or is that just more work for us that's not necessary?
Well, that's what we were talking about.
Well, I mean, obviously, if we do it our way, we have to go out and find the tenant.
Right. Paying
the if tenant. She does that, she's not going to be making any money because she's now got to pay the full rent. So she's getting money from another tenant towards her total rent.
Okay.
If it's more space, we can increase our rent. I don't know space-wise what the situation is there. But I mean, ultimately, I would think we're looking for the rental for that space, whatever it is. It's $100, whether she pays 50 and the subtenant pays 50 or she pays 75 or 25, I would think we want the $100. And that's what we ought to be looking at. I
mean, yeah, she's not going to rent it out for 150.
No.
And keep 50 and give us 100.
No.
Yeah.
I think she, and I didn't ask her, but I got the opinion that she was looking, because she doesn't need the space, she was looking to get out of it.
Yeah.
And then, but she would do the work, and when she said sublease it, she would do the work, they would pay her and she'd pay us. Well, if she's gonna do the work then and find us a renter, and the renter is willing to pay whatever she's paying now, then we just come up with a new lease and extend that agreement for the 3 years, or we can do it longer. We can come up with whatever we want to do.
She may find a better tenant.
She might, right, yeah. Although she's been a good tenant, I gotta say. But yeah, I mean, might find a, you know.
Well, as long as we get to approve the terms of whatever she has with this sublease.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's gonna be subject to our approval.
Yeah, that might, that's what I'm saying. We might want to come up with our own lease with her, with that person, so there's no middle person.
If you're going to talk to her, we just tell her to go out and find somebody, but before you do anything,
yeah,
talk to us.
Talk to us, right.
So we know what
we good with that?
Yep.
Okay. I'll let her know. She can move forward with that. All right. Spray park stuff. Might as well go first, Bob.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I assume we all got word somehow or another that a spray park nearby has opened. I asked Tony to do some research, so I'm all, I guess, not so much me, but what did you find out, Tony?
So I've been playing phone tag with Sweden Clark, who's director, going back and forth. For the message that I received this morning over to the supervisor, and he can attest to it, they're basically doing nothing. They're just asking everybody to social distance, and that's about it. Is that what you took from the message?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And doing a little homework and looking into their spray park, they don't have a fence around their spray park. It's just open, which allows them maybe to social distance a little bit more than that would be from ours. We have a fenced in area. Also reaching out to Camillus and finding out if they're still going to entertain the idea of opening, and it's a flat out no. They're not going to entertain the idea. It is closed for the season. They're not even going to discuss it. With talking with the director out there, because he came from Rochester too, Sweden Clarkson has a outdoor facility. Ogden, Chilai, Greece, Webster, Batavia, Irondequoit all have spray features in their towns. So that being said, there's more spray parks in the Rochester area, which probably alleviates some of the pressure that they face. Why would somebody from Ogden come over to Brockport when they have one in their own hometown? Here, it's only us and Camillus. So, and then the city of Syracuse doesn't even know if they're going to open up theirs. They're still hesitant on how they're going to do that. So, and the only place that I know of that's even entertaining the idea of pools is the city of Syracuse, which they went from 7 to 4. If they can get lifeguard and staffing, and the city of North Syracuse, which they're only restricting it to residents of the village. Village of North Syracuse is only open in April to residents of the village.
So under what authority did the place in Rochester open up their spray park? Did the governor, did the state of New York say it's okay to do these things? What, I mean, they,
yeah, I mean, the governor has given parks, pools, spray parks, basically up to local government to make the decision if it's best fits their community and their needs, but they had guidelines to follow. The supervisor gave me
a PERMA
course today, and I took that, registered and took that, and basically it's not good practice to do nothing. They should do something of disinfecting or cleaning. Even signage alone is not good practice of just saying play at your own risk is what was taken off of that PERMA. And that's basically our insurance. So I don't know how they're getting away with it. I don't know how they're doing it. But like I said, it was basically a message that I received this morning. It's been a phone tag back and forth. I called into Ogden, and they're just now opening their recreation department. So
what phase are they in, Tony? Do you know what phase they're in? Because that makes a difference as well, too.
I believe they're in phase three. They're the Rochester area, so they're in phase three as well, I believe. But I mean, that's the only information I have at this time.
You know, I guess if this governor has been pretty strict and stringent about the controls and the protocols that have to be followed, and I guess I would take it that if his office has basically said to the recreation community in New York State, go ahead, open up your facilities. Again, is this disease gone? No. But I would entertain the idea of absolutely opening this park and figuring out what you want to do. You know, you've got a gate, which is perhaps better than not having a fence or a gate, because you can control the number of people going in. You could figure out a way to limit the number of people at any one time. I mean, Beaver Lake has done similar things. It's not a spray park, but in terms of using the facility and the building and the restrooms. So I'm not afraid of opening it up, and there's no way I think anybody could say, oh, my kid got sick at the spray park. Could really prove it, because you just don't know where people are getting ill or not. And from the reading I've done about children and this disease, they're almost impervious to it. They may be able to carry it and spread it to adults, but they are certainly impervious to getting hurt themselves or ill themselves, with certain rare exceptions. There's always exceptions in this world. So I would propose we open the spray park, because I'm tired of being afraid.
But if they're impervious to it, why'd the school shut down?
Again, I will go back to the governor. The governor shut the schools down, and he said today he's not sure that the schools will be open this fall. But he's saying, go ahead and open up your beaches and spray parks and aquatic facilities. So you have to have some faith in our leadership in this state.
When you have a hazard with anything, you do a risk assessment. So you do a risk assessment, and normally there's all kinds of models, but one model is low, medium, high. This would be on a high level, and you look at the CDC website, they don't have spray parks in there, but they do have pools, and pools are on the high zone. So now when you have a risk, what is good practice? You find out ways to mitigate it. You find, okay, what are you going to do to mitigate the risk? If you can eliminate the risk, that's always the thing that you try to do. If you have a hurricane, you can't mitigate the risk, but you have things that you do for it. If you have a snowstorm, you can't mitigate a snowstorm, but you have things that you can do it with it. But if you have a trip hazard, you eliminate the trip hazard. Now it's gone. This, the spray park is a hazard that Tony and I were talking about it. We don't know how to mitigate, and we've been talking for 6 weeks about how to mitigate the risk with that. And I disagree with you. I've done investigations before, and I think this would be an easy one to determine that it was kids, because you're probably going to have 3, 4, 5 year olds. Well, where they're going is limited. So now they're going to say, okay, if you got a kid from Camillus, you got a kid from Fulton, you got a kid from Clay, you got a kid from Van Buren, come down and they get sick. All right, well, they start doing a background. Well, where were you? I was here, I was at the spray park. Then you got the kid from Fulton who was at the spray park. Someone else at the spray park, someone else. And with civil, it's only a preponderance of the evidence, correct, Tony? So now that's only 50% plus one. It's not a high bar that you have to meet with that. And with, I don't know, you know, I'd have to see what you were talking about with the kids, but the stuff that I've seen with kids is they have come down with pulmonary issues, everything gets inflamed in their system just like anybody else. And when they come down with it, they come down with it nasty. They come down with a very severe type of illness with this type of thing. So to me, if we can't mitigate any of these issues, then we're sitting in a room. Look, you only got 25 people in this room. Everybody's got a mask on. Nobody comes close to each other. We got to use disinfectant. We can't do any of that with the spray park. They can't wear masks. How are you going to social distance from them? Now, I just watched today on one of the morning shows, down in Florida, they had some woman had a party, 61 people in there. They didn't social distance, they didn't wear masks, which is what you're gonna get in a spray park. We're not gonna be able to keep these kids away from each other. 58 out of 61 people came down with COVID. To me, to have kids going in a water facility just for 30 minutes, 40 minutes or something, and with the potential of them coming down with a serious illness, I think that's way, way too much of a risk to those kids that we shouldn't be taking. I think government, that's what government does. They provide public safety issues. We plow the roads. We provide police. We do things to, you know, we have a codes enforcement so that they don't put up bad buildings and they don't fall down. That's what we do. Sometimes, even though I would like to open it up just as much as anybody, but I'll tell you right now, if that was open, I wouldn't bring my grandkids in, and I couldn't be in support of anything that I wouldn't myself bring, you know, go to or bring my kids in. I just think the risk far outweigh the benefits in this instance.
You make a good point, a case. I'm just so curious sitting here listening to you and wondering why the governor, who still has very strict protocols out there for lots of different things, including restaurants, why he would have allowed spray parks to open. I'm curious. I can't really
Town is basically the authorization.
Yeah, but Tony, that's not an answer because he's not allowing town by town to do other things, such as meetings like this, to what Bob is saying, to restaurants, to bars. Why are spray parks not part of that mix? I'm curious.
Can't answer that.
No, it's...
So a couple of things. One, of course, we all got emails, so someone would have to address the people who want the spray park open, right? We all have emails from people who want the spray park open, right?
I've gotten a couple.
Yeah, I've got them.
That's just primarily they're people that were the same people that promoted the spray park initially.
Right,
sure.
Right. So they want to see it, and they're willing to take that risk. I have a question about the 51 out of 68 that you mentioned, that party in Florida?
58 out of 61, yeah.
Okay, 58 out of 61. Mm-hmm. So that's a high percentage of people who were at the party that became ill.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a number? How many were hospitalized? How ill did they
get?
How big is the risk, really? Do you know what I mean?
I have no idea.
And I don't know. Maybe it's a bigger risk than I think. But I think that when we catch the news and we find out that 58 out of 61 become ill, we're like, whoa, that's pretty bad. I haven't heard the report on how ill they really are. Did
they
really get ill?
But they passed it on to someone else who could have really gotten ill or died from
Still, the numbers we're getting. We can, you know, we're using the numbers we have. What happened? Like, what's the rest of the story? And I don't know what the rest of the story is. I'm just
a curious person
because, you know, we do get doom and gloom reports, and but we don't get, oh, by the way, nobody was hospitalized. And maybe there were. I don't know.
I'm just curious
about how the number comes out, and then there's no real end of the story. So what really happened at that party?
My only point using that analogy was that the reason they came down with it was because of social distancing. When you have a group of kids, and we figured it out, maximum you could get in there is 40-something kids. So if you right. And that's if they're butted in tight. So you got 40-something kids. And then how do you keep 2 and 3 and 5 year olds, 6 year olds away from each other with no mask on and social distancing? That, you know, it's not gonna happen.
No,
it isn't.
No, it's not.
What
it's
is
not.
The max you can get in there at any given time?
I don't know that.
Yeah,
that guy's been working his way across the bench.
I know, I saw.
Did you see him over here?
Yeah.
Was that just kids or was that kids with their parents? Because a lot of the parents.
Right, that's just.
In there with their kids.
That's just people.
Touching the same thing
that's
over
just
and
people.
Over again.
Right.
And I'm not saying it's not serious. I'm just curious because we don't ever get that end of it.
Yeah,
we get the whoa end. We don't get the, by the way, this is what really happened.
I don't know. The only thing is when you said the governor opened up restaurants, and then the governor's saying with the restaurants, you better have your mask on. So if you don't have your mask on, and if the facilities aren't enforcing that, they could lose their liquor license.
Exactly.
You know, so there's got to be something. So they're putting the emphasis on the organization. So how are we going to do it? They can't wear masks. There's no way they can wear masks. How do we keep them social distance? And if we're the only spray park around, you're not going to get 40 people. You could get a lot more. So now, how are we going to regulate that? How are we going to keep, say, you can't go in, but other people can? I mean, are we going to put a time limit on? Are we going to, only say a half an hour? And then how are we going to regulate that? Now we got to have the bathrooms. How are we going to do that? There's a lot of issues that we talked about, and we couldn't come up with good solutions. And the solutions we did come up with, the money isn't there. The money isn't budgeted for that amount for that spray park, because you'd have to put on probably double the amount of people.
Plus, you had 1,000 people in that one day. So imagine
who did
when it first opened.
Oh, right,
1,000 people in one day. People aren't traveling; they're not going on vacation. Imagine the crowd now that you would get.
Right. So say 1,000 people come up, you put 40 something in there. What do we do with the remaining people that are on the outside? And how do we say, oh, you can go in and you can't go in? I think you'd get some pretty angry parents if they drove any type of distance and now we're not letting their kids go in there. I don't see how we can do it. And if we decide to do this, I think somebody that votes yes on this is going to have to take the lead on that, and because I'm not going to vote yes on something like that. I just think the risk is too high. Not that I don't. I wish we could open it up. I really do. I wish we've been talking every day. How can we open up this? And that's why I get Tony things. Come up with a plan. Like we're trying to open up the playgrounds right now, and I said to Tony, we got to come up with a plan, because someone's going to ask us. Okay, the CDC says A, B, C, and D. Well, we just got through talking about it. You better follow those CDC guidelines, and you better keep good records on what we did, and we better make sure that we do them. I don't know how we do that for the spray park. I mean, maybe you got a better idea, but I mean, obviously, if there's three people that want it open, then whoever votes yes, whomever, you know, one or all three will have to take the lead on this one, because first of all, I think it's a bad idea, you know, not to open up the spray park. I just think it's a bad idea to expose children to a risk that's for the benefit of playing in a spray park. That's what I think. I don't think it's a bad idea to have the spray park and kids in there. I think the risk outweighs the benefit. So anybody that would want to move forward with that, you'll have to come up with, and you're going to have to come up with a plan. You're going to have to come up with a good plan on how you're going to do it, you know, and, you know, what about the budget and how you're going to regulate it and all of that. There's a lot of work to this, and I think it's very, it's difficult at best, very difficult to be able to do this.
So my thoughts on this are, I agree, Peter, in regards to the fact that, you know, the media puts out a story and they present an image to us, and then we never really hear what turns out. I keep hearing about everybody that has gotten this virus and there's casualties to it. But a lot of people recover, and a lot of people are asymptomatic. That being said, as frustrated as I am with the media a lot of the time, I just don't see, doesn't make sense to me to open at this point. I think that trying to show a united front in the county, if most of the towns are not going to open, if Camillus is not going to open, I think we probably want to hold off as well.
None of the towns are opening any of their water features. I just got off the meeting today, so none of them are.
And if the city decides to take the lead, the city of Syracuse can do what they're going to do, but my thoughts are, I don't think that we should be moving forward on this.
What's done? This is not enough support.
You know,
I don't want to come off as aloof. I think you make good points, Bob, and maybe government has to err on the side of being more cautious than anybody else, because we are government. It's just so curious to me that, you know, the consistent thing that Cuomo could have done was to say, and by the way, water parks, whether they be publicly owned or privately owned, I think there's Yeah, why don't Water Safari up in Old Forge? I wonder what's going on with that.
One up there in Fulton, too.
In the one in Fulton, right. And then, I don't know if that would keep the one in Rochester still open, the private one, which used to be a dairy one.
Nice, yeah.
So it's curious that, you know, because I think the county, well, I'm not thinking, I think they are opening the two beaches, and I think the state is opening Green Lakes for swimming.
Camillus is opening up Gilly Lake. But they're, you know, there's different, what
yeah,
they're...
that's different, you're right.
They're cutting it in half, too. I mean, like, you're familiar with Oneida Shores. I think they only let in, like, 40, 50 people on the beach. That's pretty low.
Yeah. That's too bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's not going to open this year. I mean, then, you know, there's not going to be any change in this disease. Unless some magic wand gets found next week.
Well, the problem is, for us, they are not, when I say they, the state and the federal government is not giving us good direction. We don't have the resources or the expertise to be able to make these decisions on our own. We just don't have. So without good guidance from them, and when they just throw their hands up, okay, it's left on you. What kind of answer is that? That's a very weak governance on my perspective, and I just, you know, we're just not getting a lot of it. So.
Can we move on? I just want to ask another question on something else since we have Dale here. We're getting an update on LED lighting.
Yep, time.
Yes. Do we have a status on what the next status is? Or?
So the contractor that's installing the new light poles in Talamore, Timberbanks, and Radisson is scheduled to mobilize at the end of the month. What we're waiting on is final approval from National Grid on light locations and material specifications. I anticipate getting those rather quickly.
Little red convertible.
Bob.
If I was you, I'd go put the top on.
Is it raining?
Yeah, we're going to get
the
end of the month, they're scheduled to mobilize to start digging to install the poles for the new lights. The buyout, I still have not received the finalized paperwork from National Grid that'll get submitted for signature, that'll get submitted for the PSC with the buyout. I talked to Dave Pass last week. He indicated that he's just waiting on that to approve the agreement so it can get sent over to us for signature. So new lights, potentially end of this month, beginning of next month going in. You know, National Grid 30 to 60 days on powering those up once they're installed.
Yeah.
You know, right now with National Grid, the ball's in the National Grid's court. Bio board.
What else? We've got a few more minutes. Nothing else?
Mr. Supervisor?
Yes.
Would you like to do the public hearings on July 16th? July 16th?
Do we need to?
Al, would that be okay for the stop signs?
It depends on if the bonds are in place for Whispering Oaks 4 when we take dedication. I don't believe we can do the resolution for the stop sign until we actually own the road.
Oh.
We won't own the road until the securities are in place.
So we don't know for sure.
I know they're scheduled, you know, weather permitting by the end of next week, they're going to pave the road.
Okay.
So the next step after that is
allergies.
National Grid mobilizing and putting in the gas and electric.
Stuff floating through the air out there.
And then we would be in a position to take dedication of the roads.
So maybe August 6th?
That's my guess. That would be a safer bet, would be August 6th.
So you want to wait that long to do the exemption? Because we don't have to. We could do this on July 16th.
For what?
For what Teresa spoke about,
the
exemptions for
firefighters.
Oh, but that doesn't take effect until next year anyway.
So it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. Yeah. So I'm thinking we could do... You know, we could do them all in one day. That way, if somebody has a couple of things they want to look at, they could come to one meeting and get it all done.
Okay. So then we're probably looking at August 6th or August
6th. Yeah. Yeah, if we can, we'll put them all on the August 6th agenda. And
okay.
I work with Mike Donald once a month.
People can get that up.
Thanks.
Got anything else?
Nothing.
No.
Anything else? Okay. No. Call, yep.
What? I said recess.
Recess. Yeah, we'll call the work session adjourned at 46:44. Little recess.
I'm going to go put